This week's episode of the Worn and Wound podcast is brought to you by Timeless Luxury Watches and their new collaboration with Nomos and the National Breast Cancer Foundation. In partnership, they have created two custom Nomos Club campus models to support the work of the foundation, providing help and inspiring hope to those affected by breast cancer. Stay tuned to later in the episode to learn more.
Hey everyone, this is Blake, and real quick before we get to the podcast, I just wanted to remind everybody that we have a sale running at the Wind Up Watch Shop. So right now, all straps and accessories, aside from those from Rios 1931, are all on sale for 15% off. That's anyone, anywhere in the world can buy any strap or accessory that is not from Rios 1931 and get 15% off. That's running through Sunday, March 24th at 11:59 p.m. Eastern. Head over to the Wind Up Watch Shop and buy some stuff.
Hey everyone, this is Ilya, and joining me on the podcast is Blake.
Hey.
And Zach.
How's it going?
And we're recording live from Basel, Switzerland, after our first full day of meetings. So we're going to go over, obviously, all the meetings that we had and what watches we saw and what we liked and what we didn't like. I'm going to do a quick run through of all the brands that we met with today. So we met with Fossil, Tudor, Oris, Ming, then Seiko, Tag, and we finished the day with Manta. And one of the last things that we did was came as a bit of a surprise that we actually hopped on the tail end of a Hodinkee radio podcast.
Yeah, that was a lot of
recording.
Fun.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, very unexpected, but so check that out.
Yeah, for sure.
Well, I guess the same day that this is published, so.
Presumably, yeah.
Yeah. Cool. So we have a lot to talk about today. So why don't we start with Fossil? I actually didn't go to Fossil. I had some work to take care of beforehand, and you two went to Fossil. So tell us about what you saw. I know those GMTs are getting quite a bit of buzz.
So being more precise, we went to the Fossil group. They don't actually exhibit in the hall anymore. They have their corporate headquarters about 8-minute walk from the main hall. So it's very convenient. And we just went in to see Zodiac. There's a million other things going on there if you wish to see them. But, you know, it's Fossil group, so that ranges wildly. But Zodiac, obviously, is a brand we've always enjoyed. And, you know, we had already published the post on the GMT. We luckily had gotten, you know, information about that leading up to the show. And yeah, we really went to go check that out, talk to them, really nice people over there. We met with a designer who, you know, gives like a great and honest opinion on everything and how the process of making things and whatever. And those GMTs are really nice.
Mm-hmm.
They're really nice.
Yeah.
I don't really have any complaints about them or anything. It's like, if you like the pictures, you'll like them in person.
Mm-hmm. I think another really cool thing with them, aside from the watch itself, is the bracelets that it came on. Mm. I don't remember this from when we've ever had them in the office, but they have, I won't explain it on the podcast because I don't remember the specifics, but they have like basically a flexing mechanism to the bracelet clasp that sort of functions similarly to the Tudor Pelagos bracelet clasp.
Yeah.
Just basically designed to make it more like comfortable when you are wearing it and it's warm out and like you swell up a little bit or whatever the case may be. But what's really nice about it, one, it just seems to operate well, but unlike the Tudor bracelet, which you have to have it on a very specific micro adjustment for the spring to kick in. So like it can't be on any of the other ones. Like it has to be on either the largest or the smallest micro adjustment setting. Mm-hmm. That just works all the time on the Zodiac, which was very cool. Like as a Pelagos owner, I always, you know, wish that was on other Tudors. So it's cool, that Zodiac has something like that.
It was, it's a nice, very nice detail. And the aesthetic of the bracelet was nice. They did a cool little trick where they had like sort of a little indent at the edge, which gives it like the hint of a rivet bracelet without the rivets. And it's, it just works somehow, you know. The colors on those watches are great, though.
Yeah, like, that's what I wanted to know about.
Yeah, so there's the one that looks like the original from back in the day. So it's got like the bezel, these like kind of faux bakelite bezels, which are hardened mineral crystal actually over like a print.
Mm-hmm.
One is black for the first 12 hours and a gray, but like a blue gray. And they match it very close to the vintage, which they had in the glass there. Straightforward, nice, appealing, doesn't look like other GMT split bezels you're obviously very familiar with. Then the other one, which I guess people, I heard someone else say this, are calling it the creamsicle, or like maybe this is a nickname,
mm-hmm.
is sort of like a milky blue white for the first, and then like a bright orange.
Mm-hmm.
And it's really nice.
Yeah.
It's really nice. It's like really fun retro orange. It doesn't have that, extreme diver intensity. It's like
feels more playful.
It's playful. Yeah. They get it. It's just like not too sharp of an orange. They get it just right. So it's like colorful without having to wear like a really bright colored watch. And like, while my like, I would make, if I were to buy one, like I think I would be kind of drawn to the safety of the black gray one, which you wouldn't go wrong with. But I think like the reality is that that white orange one is like the more fun and like different watch. Mm-hmm. And these are, they're very limited too. It's like 300 something pieces total between the two.
I think it's actually, yeah, 182 okay. pieces each. And the 182 is based on the founding year of Zodiac.
Okay.
Yeah. 1882, I think.
Okay. Not 182 AD. No, but yeah, it's so that's very few, and they're powered by ETA 2893s, which I also actually thought was interesting. They weren't
using, not the STPs,
not using STP. I don't think there is a central GMT there. You know, that's always been kind of a weird thing with the Zodiac. It's like, you know, they're not inexpensive watches, and I think there's, you know, some people are maybe questioning if they want to get this movement they don't know very much about. And while I expected it to be the GMT version of theirs, having it be the 2893, I feel like just makes it like an easier buy.
Mm-hmm. You know, a little safer.
It's a trusted movement.
Yeah. Cool.
So
we also got to see, I can't remember the name of the watch, but the one with the sort of oddly shaped case.
From last year?
Yeah, from last year. I had never seen one in person. Those are awesome.
Very cool. That watch always wows me in person. It's smaller than you think it's going to be. The weirdness of the case is not, it's not too weird. I mean, though it is too weird, it's not too weird on the wrist. Like, mm-hmm. it's a gorgeous watch, really. I was trying on the sort of dressier version, which is like a sunray black dial, but they quadrant the sunray bursting. So I guess it's like actually like almost like a hand finished thing. So each quadrant goes a different direction. Mm-hmm. So it gives it a crosshair feel. Then there's some gold accents, including a gold numeral and black date disc, which is
cool.
Really nice.
Yeah, it's neat.
Yeah, and that watch is cool. Just, I like that they put the crown in a totally crazy place, but like it doesn't. They didn't do it for craziness's sake. They did it for like it's well executed. Like it's good. It's good.
It's not wacky looking.
No, you get the same effect as like, you know, the 007, but you know, crown. It's like out of the way and still functional. Mm-hmm. So,
all right, you guys want to jump to Tudor?
Dudes,
let's do it. So we finally saw the watch. What's the reference of that one?
Black again? Bay P01.
Right. And I think we have a lot of thoughts on that after seeing it.
Who wants to go? Who wants to begin?
Zach, you start. Because I think I think you had some pointed criticism yesterday. And I think like your takeaway today was really interesting.
Yeah. So, I mean, you know, I just didn't want to prejudge it the way it was getting prejudged, you know, even though like looking at the renders, I wasn't thrilled by it. But I also like, don't think Tudor owes it to us to make hits every year. That's, I guess what I get to save $4,000, you know, so do you. I not that I buy every watch they come out with at all. I don't have any, but seeing it in person, it's a very weird watch. Like the weirdness isn't underplayed. It is strange. It is based on a conceptual prototype that was never made. It's got a locking mechanism. It's got big bulbous parts. It's long. It's very, very weird. It just doesn't look like a watch that comes out of a big Swiss watch company like Tudor. And in that, it's kind of shocking. But it's not horrible either. Mm-hmm. It's not grotesque. Like, you put it on some people's wrists. It was way too big for my wrist. It was too long. I didn't like it on my wrist at all. Period. I would never in a million years think about buying it or be tempted. It's fine by me. But we saw it on James Stacey's wrist from Houdini. He was in the same meeting. And it kind of worked.
Yeah,
him,
it looked good on him.
Mm-hmm.
And like, yeah, I think that's really it. It's like, what else do you need to know? It's like, it's not for everyone. So what? If you like it, you like it.
Yeah.
If you don't, I don't like it. But I don't have to. And that's kind of it. I like other watches there. I don't know.
But I think worth mentioning is also that it's like, whatever you thought from those photos, it's beautifully engineered.
Of course.
Like, it's really well made. Yeah. That clasp, that locking mechanism works really well.
Yeah, and we felt the other precise locking mechanisms. And like, this one is like, so that's this big hinged thing up at 12 between the lugs, and it's not nice looking. Mm-hmm. I mean, it's like a bulbous thing, and it pops open in a very satisfying way. And then you have a bi-directional 60 click bezel, which I don't think they have on other watches, which felt good.
Mm-hmm.
And it snaps back down, and that thing doesn't have a hair of movement,
mm-hmm.
you know? And I commented on that on Instagram. People were like, 4K for a bezel locking system. But it's like, well, okay, 4K without the bezel locking system. Now what? Yeah. You know, it's like it adds something because it works. And I'm much happier that they went through the trouble of engineering it to do what it's supposed to do rather than putting something aesthetic there that kind of looked like it or mm-hmm. didn't work as well. You know, I mean, they could have put just bulbous things there and called them bumpers,
mm-hmm.
you know?
Yeah, for sure. Totally.
I just think it's really interesting that, you know, like the reaction to the watch for the leak and then right when it came out has sort of like painted the coverage of it into this corner where you're defending it. But like there's nothing to defend. Mm-hmm. It's a cool watch with an interesting background that is not for 90% of the general public who are buying watches.
Really, even 95.
And that's it.
Yeah.
That's it.
No, yeah. And you know what? I'm like annoyed that I'm defending because I don't want to defend it. Yeah. I don't care about it. I don't care about that. Like, cool. Yeah. It's just like buy it or don't.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Period.
No, 100%.
You know?
Yeah.
And I think there's all kinds of things you can criticize brands for. Not criticize, but, you know, like critique in terms of what they're releasing and what they're not releasing. And you can criticize Tudor. Like, where's the update to the Pelagos? Like, where are more Black Bay 58s? All these kinds of things. If you're a huge Tudor fan and you're pulling for one of these things because you're ready to, you know, go out and buy one tomorrow and you're like, shit, I'm not seeing anything I want to buy. Like, fine, complain about those things, but get over it. That's kind of my opinion.
And the printed dial is nice.
It's really nice, yeah.
I mean, that's not, for me, even 1% of a reason to go and buy it, but it was nice looking and I hope.
Yeah, I'd love to see that do carry that over.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But Tudor also had other watches that mm-hmm. I think are getting a little lost in the fray. And people are kind of like, oh, Rolex and Tudor, everything that came out this year is bad. And it's like, no, they just have a divisive year, you know? Black Bay Bronze, everyone went crazy for it when it first came out. What they came out with this year, the gray version, is iterative, but it's really nice looking.
Yeah, mm-hmm. It replaces the previous version.
Okay.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, period. Really nice looking bronze one. Mm-hmm. I think those are going to be available almost immediately, too. And I know those, we've heard from retailers that those sell up fast. So, mm-hmm. you know, get it or don't.
Yeah. That slate gray dial is really nice. Yeah. I mean, they made the point of saying that in photos, it doesn't really like show how nice it is. And that's kind of true. Like in person, it's really quite stunning.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. And then they had the steel and gold chronograph.
Yeah.
That was like funky as all hell. But when you see it in person, again, like the execution's great and like the detailing on it is really good. And I personally think that the gold pushers and crown are a bit much. Like maybe if like the knurling on the screw down pushers were gold, but the pushers themselves were steel, or maybe the edge of the crown were gold and the rest were steel. It's a bit much for me, but otherwise
black and gold there or something. Yeah.
Yeah. Because otherwise it's pretty nice.
Yeah.
And like on that bun strap, and the leather they used for the strap is just like super gnarly and like distressed and very cool. And the bun strap makes it look awesome. Like in the press meeting, they basically showed a little video before with the announcement of each brand. They like show a video and then they give you a little talk about the watch. And like the video for that one was like this dude driving an old vintage car in the snow. And it was just, it looks good in that setting. Like, that's the feeling they're trying to convey, and I think it does it well.
And it has, like, a gearhead feel. Like, mm-hmm. there's something about that watch. Like, it's swagger. Mm-hmm. You know what I mean? Mm-hmm. Like, it's not subtle. It's almost like, and I kind of mean this, I don't mean this necessarily in a bad way, but there's almost, like, a sleaziness to it. Like, mm-hmm. it's like a, like, it's got a leather jacket on. It's kind of mm-hmm. greasy, you know? Mm-hmm. Like,
no, totally.
But I liked it, you know? I actually quite liked it. Like, I'm surprised how much I liked it, you know? And I actually hadn't seen the chronograph in person. I missed the year
they
brought it out.
This was your first time,
Yeah, so, I mean, I thought it was appealing. And one thing, you know, I was talking to the Swiss designer who was gave us, like, the meeting, and he was showing us the watches after, and I was asking about the thickness of it, and I actually didn't even mean to bring this up, but he was like, oh, you know, that's actually something I wanted to mention, but we've, like, kind of re-engineered how the crystal fits, and that allows us to do this with the hands, blah, 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 blah. And they took a millimeter out of that case. So that case is about as thick as the Black Bay 41 three-hand, which, like, I've given a lot of guff for being too tall and whatever. We've gone over this a million times. But on an automatic column wheel, vertical clutch, 70-hour silicone power spin chronometer chronograph, that's a height you want. Like, it's not unexpected.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
So, you know, it's actually, it's a cool watch. It's a cool watch. I know. Yeah. I know people go crazy over the snowflake hand over sub dials. Yeah.
And the way they engineer the value by using like gold cap links on the bracelet is actually kind of neat.
Yeah.
So it's not gold plated. It's actually like physically manipulated gold on top of steel that gets folded over, so you can actually refinish it should you scratch your bracelet up, which is pretty neat.
Yeah.
I mean, you can't do that with plating, so it's a good way of like balancing price and, you know, the aesthetics of gold.
Yeah, so now like the self-fulfilling prophecy of us being in the bag for Tudor has come true. We just spent 20 minutes defending them. So.
We just sold out.
All right, so after Tudor, we went to Oris, which is always a fun time.
Yeah,
Oris is great.
They release a ton of stuff. Yeah. There's a lot of things. So it's kind of hard to necessarily go through
things
everything.
Things you can talk about, things you can't talk about.
Yeah.
We won't talk about those.
Yeah. But
it started with the watches we wrote about the other day, the Aquas, and I'm going to forget the names. But
it's I think it's the Clean Ocean,
yeah,
which is named after, I think, an organization that they work with, which is part of Oris's greater initiative surrounding like water conservation and cleaning up the environment, things like that.
So they're limited edition Aquases, and they're gorgeous.
Yeah.
Like, really gorgeous.
Beautiful blues.
I feel like Oris, what stood out to me about Oris generally was like, their use of color is getting better and better, and I feel like they have an ability to pick like colors other people won't pick and get them so right, you know? Like, and not just the colors, but the finishing. So like, what amazed me with these, the Aquas ones is they're teal, like a teal dial, kind of teal aqua, and the dial starts brighter and it fades in that kind of like ombre that gets really, you know, it's kind of getting popular, but then the bezel perfectly matches the darkness of the ombre. So it like feeds totally out and seamless and just gorgeous.
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. The Aquas line has really grown on me.
For a modern diver with truly its own DNA, it's one of the standouts that's out there, you know?
Yeah.
And a lot of other things from them. God, there were so many other things.
Yeah, there was like a Pro Pilot. There's some new Diver 65s.
I really like the Pro Pilot GMT countdown, I think they call it.
Yeah.
So the big difference, it was a Pro Pilot GMT. It was on the large size, around 44 millimeters. And had the central GMT with the 9 o'clock seconds, which they've used before. But this one used that kind of turbine bezel, but turned into a rotating bi-directional bezel. Awesome. Just awesome. Yeah. It was a great looking watch. A little too big for me personally, but I think it actually works at that size.
Yeah.
Cause it's gorgeous. Yeah.
Yeah, it was great. Yeah.
And then there's a new Diver 65 with the bronze insert on the steel bezel with the various accents. Actually, generally speaking, around the Diver 65 line, they kind of said that they've expanded the line to the point now where basically any kind of version you see of it with a different dial layout or case coloring, you can kind of find it all the various sizes, which is cool. Because I think at first when they started growing that line, it was maybe a bit confusing because you'd see a color you really like, but you can't get it in the size you want it. So now that's been eliminated. But that includes they released this really cool watch with like a bronze insert bezel, which was really, really nice.
That was neat.
Sort of like a milled insert. I mean, sort of like the Carl Brashear ones, but it was the logical last thing. But one thing that was surprising about that was that they did the rivet bracelet with a central, the center link.
Or bronze.
It's solid bronze.
Yeah.
So you're going to get a patinated bracelet,
which is
weird.
Very cool.
That's cool.
Yeah.
Cool. And obviously that's not going to be for everyone. If you have like a bronze allergy or whatever, that's definitely not going to be for you. But
My skin turns green when I wear bronze, but like I would love to see how that thing ages.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's probably neat.
And then we saw a few new colors of the pointer date, the Big Crown pointer date, including like the nicest, what's the color? I'm blanking now.
Burgundy.
A burgundy color. Yeah. That was like maybe the highlight of the meeting.
Yeah.
The burgundy pointer date.
That was
super,
the surprise.
Super deep, rich red. Yeah. So nice.
Really handsome color. Yeah. Looks like I had it on. I had a blue blazer on. It looked really good with dark blue. Yeah. It's like, whatever, jumping ahead, but it sort of only was oddly rivaled by a Seiko. Grand Seiko had like an burgundy, and between the two of those, I think like, God, burgundy dials.
Yeah, yeah. And then another really cool thing from the meeting was they're making this transition. You know, Oris has always had this, you know, like long-standing commitment to environmental causes. They've supported them through limited editions, including the one that we talked about a second ago. But they've also just like looked to improve in other ways as a company. And so they're actually going to be transitioning to, a much more stripped down version of packaging. So, across the line, they're going to eliminate the boxes and you're going to start getting these leather wallets, which are like much, much better for the environment, far less wasteful. And I think just generally much more useful for, like the end consumer. And that's so smart. I really hope more brands move to something like that. You know, one, I never know what to do with my watch boxes. And two, you know, I stare at them and I go, what a dumb thing to sit on my desk, mm-hmm. you know? And so to have like a useful watch wallet
yeah.
would be great.
So. And to piggyback off of that, all their leather products now are veg tanned
yep.
and no longer chrome tanned, which is pretty toxic sort of process.
Yeah.
So.
Yeah. So they're really like walking the walk with that, which yeah. is cool.
And now a word from our sponsor. The National Breast Cancer Foundation Nomis Club Campus is a collaboration between the Foundation, Nomis Glass Suta, and Timeless Luxury Watches. Two versions are available, in 36mm and 38.5mm, with a portion of each sale going to fund the National Breast Cancer Foundation. The smaller model features a white silver-plated dial, a pink seconds hand, and peak outlines for each numeral. The larger model features a dark blue dial, a pink seconds hand, and light blue minute markers. Each is powered by an alpha hand wound movement, upgraded with the Nomos Swing system. Both feature steel case backs with an engraving of the National Breast Cancer Foundation logo, a symbol of life, growth, and hope for the future. As with other club campus models, custom engraving is available on the back of each watch. The price for the National Breast Cancer Foundation models is $1,500 for the 36mm model and $1,650 for the 38.5mm model, which is the same as the original Nomos Club campuses. Unlike previous Timeless collaborations with Nomos, the National Breast Cancer Foundation Nomos Club Campus is not a limited edition, but rather a regular production model which is intended to create a continuous contribution to the National Breast Cancer Foundation. To learn more or to purchase one of these special pieces, head to timelessluxwatches.com. That's timelessluxwatches.com.
So the next meeting, actually, I took, and that was with Ming, just to check out the 1902 World Timer with the Schwarz-Etienne movement, which is a really cool watch that came out a while ago, but we obviously hadn't seen it in the metal, so this was our opportunity to do that. And it's a beautiful watch. It's probably, like, aesthetically, like, the best watch that Ming's ever produced, even more attractive, in my opinion, than the first iteration of their high-end, you know, watch that they did. I think that was the 1901.
Yeah, I mean,
I get confused with all the references. But anyways, the 1902 is just beautiful. It's a world timer movement. It's a micro rotor movement. It's beautifully finished. Really just a stunning caliber to look at. Mm-hmm. You know, you can't really say that about too many movements. And also just not too many micro rotor movements out there. But one of my favorite details is that it's actually a sapphire sandwich. And the way it kind of works is like the case back is essentially a sapphire. When you catch light in a certain way, you can actually see light bleed from like the top and through the case back, and it creates this weird like halo effect. It's really unique. Yeah.
That sounds very cool.
Yeah.
They've done a lot in 2 years, actually, when you think about when they started. Like, we met them for the first time at Basel last year, and that was really the first time we could have met them at Basel.
Mm-hmm.
And they have two high-end watches and like a handful of more affordable watches.
Yeah.
It's actually impressive, you know.
Yeah. And here's the thing, like, Ming's affordable watches are really nice, especially for the price. But these really are at a totally different level. Like, it's not even just the fact that it's using this high-end movement, but the overall finishing is incredible. And he told me that their production partner is Schwarz-Etienne. Like, they produce the watch for them.
Mm.
So,
you also win the contest for, like, the creepiest Instagram story.
Instagram story?
So, meeting, okay. And it's like a close-up picture of the Ming case back. Like, sort of focus on the micro rotor, go on Instagram and look at it, and then like all these hands like all of a sudden come out of the middle of the air and start clapping around the micro rotor. It's very creepy.
There was one version of that GIF that was like less creepy, but I definitely went for the creepy version.
Good.
It reminded me of like the scene from The Labyrinth.
I was thinking
where the main character, she falls down this hole and it's like she's saved by a bunch of like weird hands grabbing her, and like they start making faces and talking to her.
Spoiler, man.
Yeah. There's a lot more to spoil.
Yeah. David Bowie.
In tights.
Yeah. Okay. What's up next?
So up next is Seiko, which is always a fun meeting because we're huge Seiko fans here at Worn & Wound.
Yeah, we took some big meetings today. It was kind of like, and these were each all also like an hour long.
Or yeah.
Tudor Ores. And, you know, it's funny, like, they felt really short.
Mm-hmm.
Like, frighteningly short. Like, yeah. I felt like there were things... Yeah. We were hoping to like do live video or whatever, and it's like, wait, it's how.
Mm-hmm. Well, I also feel like those hour long meetings were today feels like strangely more taxing than other days.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Like, it's because when you take a 30-minute meeting, it's like you're there, you barely have enough time to process anything and then you're gone. And like your mind continuously like stimulated throughout the day with news things. And like with the hour long meetings, like you really settle in and have to focus for a long period of time.
Yeah.
I found that very tiring after a while.
But also those hour long meetings, you're constantly looking at products. So it's an hour of nonstop product.
And especially like you were saying, Zach, it feels fast. Mm-hmm. Yeah. So that means an hour of like rapid fire, like information coming at you. So
yeah. Let's start with Grand Seiko. I mean, a lot of really neat stuff there.
So much there.
I mean, so they recently reintroduced like a new caliber. It's a hand wind mechanical movement with
sub-second 9 power 3.
That's what it is. Yep. Really unique, right? Like, and just actually stunning. Like,
so you'd see him
I'd seen him in person back in New York.
Ugh. They're so gorgeous. Yeah. They really are. It's just like, and it felt very different from other Grand Seikos. Mm-hmm. Like, it's more fluid. It's less about the faceting. But well, like finishing, you know, that's what everyone talks about with the Grand Seiko. Mm-hmm. It's a finishing company. It's about details and hand done, you know, hand labor and small production and like the art and craft of high end watchmaking. Like that's what it's all about. And then you see these watches just exemplify that to such an incredible degree. I mean, there's other things we saw too, which were even further, but these to me, like just the lines are liquidy, the dials dome and absolutely dramatic ways. There's texturing, hand texturing layers and layers and layers of lacquer. So like this burgundy one, which I was kind of referring to before, you take a loop to it and like it's like you're looking into like a marble or something. Mm-hmm. You know, it's just it goes on and on. Ugh.
Yeah,
absolutely stunning. Incredible. Like I would hands down, if like money was no object, like you just have to have these. It's the most gorgeous thing you've seen.
Yeah. Period,
you know, and the dials. So they were telling us, Joe Kirk from Grand Seiko was, you know, does a great job explaining everything. And, there's ones with faceted batons, and then there's ones with printed dials. And first of all, the paint on those printed dials is made up using gold powder and platinum powder. So that's actually, pigment.
It's not printed. It's hand painted.
Well, that's what I was going to get to. Yeah. They look printed. They're not. They're hand-painted. And these aren't shapes that you think you can hand-paint. It's not just like a thin line. Mm-hmm. It's like it's a designed form.
Yeah.
Then you take it under a loop, and you can see that the paint itself is like, it doesn't have like the perfect uber-flat quality of like a print. But I mean, these are as perfect as like a hand-done thing could possibly get.
Absolutely.
You know?
Yeah. And the other thing that's worth mentioning is that those cases are also Zeratsu polished, but they developed a new technique of Zeratsu polishing where they can now actually have curved cases and not just these like more like harsh angular designs, which Grand Seiko is sort of known for. That's a grammar of design, but they've done it here, and like the effect is stunning. Like it's really some of the most beautiful polishing you'll ever see in a watch case.
No, I mean those watches were stunning.
Yeah.
Dream.
What else? And we saw the new Prospects collection.
Yeah
So there's
should we jump back though quickly and talk about the snowflake
sure one? Yeah.
Just like, so long as we're on Grand Seiko and hand finishing, there was like a Grail Grand Seiko spring drive model, which I know you're pretty taken with, Blake.
I mean, I'm not going to explain it very well other than it was like probably the most visually stunning thing we'd seen all day.
Yeah.
They were talking about, you guys should explain it, but the case just is textured in this amazing way that requires hand finishing. And it was just,
I think it's hand done.
It glistened a diamond. Like that's kind of like, it was bizarre.
I mean, if you're familiar with the snowflake, which has this texture that's this hand engraved texture that's sort of like wind swept snow, which, you know, they have like a story about with the mountain outside of the, you know, it's like it's all wrapped up in the area that they're in, that the studio's in Japan.
Mm-hmm.
They took it out of the dial and did it to the case as well. Mm-hmm. So the case has got this funky texture to it, which makes it, I mean, once it's on the metal on the outside, it almost looks like bark or something. And it's made out of platinum. I mean, it's a 70-something-thousand-dollar watch that they're making 30 of. But, like, good luck not staring at it. It's like a Pandora's box. It's just like you're, like, lost in this thing.
Yeah. And, I mean, as we learned from the fellows over at Hodinkee tonight on our radio show, Doxa also released a $70,000 watch at Basel, which is a solid gold Doxa.
T-graph.
Mm-hmm. And I think I would much prefer the Grand Seiko at that price.
Yeah.
Put me crazy down for the talk.
Grand... Yeah.
You guys want to jump to Prospects?
Yeah.
Cool. I mean, lots of really cool stuff there too. Obviously, the biggest thing is the 6105 reissue. It's something that they've been doing for the last couple of years. They've been taking some of Seiko's most iconic divers, reissuing them. You know, it's made in one of their high-end studios. It's Zeratu polished. It has a basically Grand Seiko movement in it. But yeah, I mean, it's a really faithful reissue of an iconic watch. It looks great.
Yeah, I mean, yeah. It's a little bit bigger, right?
They said they made like it a little larger. Yeah, and I think it's has an increased depth rating, perhaps?
Yeah. Maybe they boosted the depth rating. Yeah. I'm not sure. They definitely made some structural improvements to that watch.
They didn't just clone it. They made a modern version of it, but visually similar. Yeah.
As I recall from putting that watch on when I've seen them in the wild, like they fit and feel way better than you think they're going to. Mm-hmm. Like they just kind of look slabby and tooly. And you put it on, it just feels really nice on your wrist. It sits really flat. It's just like really pleasant. And I got the same feel from this one when I put it on. Like it just made a lot of sense.
Yeah.
Like it's a well-engineered watch. Yeah. And if you're into the old one, you're going to be into this one.
I will say, though, I am disappointed that there wasn't an affordable flip side to it this year, because they've done that every other, last couple of years.
The last 2 years. Yeah.
And I have one on the table, the SPB-077, which was the flip side last year of... sort of the Marine Master model, but I forget the actual...
Based on the 6159, I think.
Yeah, 6159. Yeah. So I think it's just a nice way of that brand paying like full homage to their history. Here's here's one for the collectors, and here's one for the rest of you to enjoy. And it's not like in a bad way at all. It's a great way, you know? Yeah, so it's a little sad to see they didn't do that, and I kind of wonder what the decision-making process there was.
Yeah.
Maybe it's SKU control, maybe it's... Well, who knows? Yeah. But like...
Well, one thing
that's a funky case, and they've done an interesting job at reinterpreting in them for the $500 to $1,000 price bracket as well. So,
do you know how much on average are the older ones going for?
6105s. Well, I think
over $1,000 easily.
I mean, how cheap do you think they could have made the cheap version for?
The other ones have been teetering around $1,000 on bracelets, so I think they would have,
because I'm just wondering if you miss out on it on the cheaper version of this, just go buy the real thing. If it's like roughly the same price.
But the real thing now, it's like it's one, it's harder to find.
A lot harder.
Yeah, which is obviously going to be an issue. But also, there's some structural issues with the old one. Like the crown's a bit like of a shit show, to be honest. Yeah. So
Stoff wrote about them years ago. And there's some like things you need to look out for with those watches.
Yeah.
Otherwise, you're going to get a dud. Plus, as with a lot of Seiko vintage, there's just the issue of Frankenstein watches, it's very hard to tell if you've got original parts. You can decide up to yourself if you really care. I think they can range from made 2 years ago to made 20 years ago, replacement parts kind of a thing.
Yeah. I mean, I think if you're going to shell out over $1,000, you're going to care,
Mm-hmm. Yeah, you should.
Yeah, for sure.
Oh, you know what? There was one other Seiko that I was very surprised to see, and it was a lot of fun. The Arnie.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. It's sort of a tuna-esque Anna Digi thing. This looked like something you find in a box of stuff that you put away when you went to college or something. Mm-hmm. And you're like, oh, my Arnie.
It's a legendary watch.
Yeah, it's dated, but it's great.
Yeah.
It's cool that they brought it back. That's just going to be a fun little watch. I would pick one of those up. It's just neat.
Yeah, I'm glad that Seiko Zoomorph and a Digi. Yeah. It's a cool platform to mess around with.
Yeah, I haven't seen the Digi Tunas, but seeing this made me want to see those.
Well, the Digi Tunas, they were never an American release, right?
I thought for a minute they were, but I think I might have just gone to the wrong website.
Yeah.
So, yeah, I mean, you can get them here, but not officially.
And then the other series that came out that was kind of interesting was the new Prospects LX, which is sort of like a higher tier of the Prospects range. So these ones have spring drive calibers in them, which is pretty impressive. I don't know when the last time, a non-Grand Seiko or non-Creator watch had a spring drive caliber.
Certainly for U.S. market.
For the U.S. market,
There is some sort of mythical Marine Master, a couple Marine Masters out there, I believe, that had them. But you're only going to find them JDM.
Yeah. They're really neat. I mean, so thematically, they cover land, sea, and sky. And it's obviously one, I think, it's a dive watch. The other one's a GMT traveler watch.
Which that would be the air or the, And then there's the...
A GMT with a compass bezel is the other one, I think.
Yeah, which is the land. That's the Landmaster or whatever.
Yeah.
Which,
I mean, they were really nice.
They're big. These are clunkers, but they're tanks and they're cool looking, you know.
Obviously they're kind of modeled after the Marine Master.
Yeah.
And you know, I've always kind of found the Marine Master itself to be a bit of a clunker. It's like it's a big definitely. Watch. It's, you know, you have to have like some wrist heft to be able to pull it off.
But yeah, I mean, I like them visually. They're not for me. They're also expensive. These are a much higher price point for the prospects line. I mean, they're over the 6105 reissue. They're, I think, are all 5500 or so.
Yeah.
Which is a lot. But yeah.
I mean, part of that, you're paying obviously for the movement and for the higher level of finish too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Do you think we should come up or like adopt the chonker scale for watches? We put that on the website.
I think so. I forgot what article it was, but I definitely the other day was going to call this a real chonker and something, and I didn't.
All right, should we move on?
Sure.
All right, so the next meeting I didn't go to, but that was TAG, and you guys went.
So yeah, we went to TAG this year, and TAG launched a new Atavia.
Mm-hmm.
You know, it's funny. I feel like because of the Tudor, the Atavia is maybe getting a little bit lesser coverage or a buzz, attention. Maybe that'll follow in a couple of days when everyone's cooled down a bit. But I mean, it's kind of, you know, the Atavia is a huge Hoyer line, and it's extremely revered. And they, you know, re-released they did the kind of heritage chronograph the last few years. They've iterated on it with an in-house caliber and, you know, lots of opinions there. And then this one is like, whew, totally different watch. It's not a chronograph.
Yeah. It is a complete miss for me.
Okay, yeah.
I just feel like it is non-referential to anything. Correct? Like, it's not really referencing another watch.
They certainly didn't show anything in reference. And if you
so
look
in
to
all
the...
fairness, if it is, they didn't explain that to us.
Yeah.
And for what it is debatably nice. Like, I don't particularly like that watch.
Yeah.
So, and you're dealing with the Atavia line, which is, like, one of the most important things within the catalog of TAG Heuer. So, like, what is up with this watch? Like, why did you choose to make a dedicated line for the Atavia and then make it something that is totally unrelated to anything else and questionably decent? Like, it just seems so strange.
And the thing with it also, so, you know, Atavia is automotive, aviation, hybrid watch. That was always the concept behind it, even though it's more in reality tied to automotive than aviation. Mm-hmm. And maybe the idea was to pull it more towards aviation, because I certainly didn't get anything automotive out of these. I mean, the dial is a field dial, basically. Mm-hmm. It's, if you look at the typeface, it's actually very close to like what Breitling or what Braymont and Vertex are using on their sort of Dirty Dozen inspired watches, including that 4 that has a very distinct sort of like curve to it.
Mm-hmm.
And then a Roman sword hour hand is straight, you know, so that's also kind of pilot-y. And then the bezel is a timer bezel, you know, like there's no automotive hints here. And it's big, it's 42, like. So I get nothing car out of it.
Do you have any idea why they didn't make a chronograph?
I don't have any idea why they did this watch at all.
Like, again, I could be totally missing something. Maybe I sound like an idiot right now. But
I mean,
like,
are there
any
chronographs?
Famous Atavias that are not chronographs?
Not that I know of.
No, but I'm hardly a Hoyer scholar. You know, I mean, they've made so many watches in years, so they could be referring to something in the...
Maybe from the 90s.
80s and 90s. Yeah. No, totally. I mean, they made a lot of weird stuff. You know, there's the Hoyer, and then there's
that
the TAG.
That heyday of Atavias.
I mean, the Atavia, a watch that was saved by a cigarette brand, which, whatever, you can look that up. But fascinating story. Mm-hmm. How they did that. But, but there is saving grace. To the story?
Generous.
So it's called the Atavia, the Atavia Isograph. And if you're paying attention to SIHH, even though TAG wasn't there, they made a rager release during SIHH. I don't know why brands do that. Where they released a very funky looking Carrera chronograph Tourbillon, which has a new hairspring in it, which is entirely their own development. And it's a carbon composite hairspring. So... Mm-hmm. A lot of similar benefits as a silicon hairspring, but it's different, and I'm sure on a technical level, there's all sorts of other differences. I frankly haven't read up on it that much. It's very, it gets very technical, but the fact is it's not metal, it's not silicon, it's TAG's own thing, and it was just in a high-end concept watch. The fact that it trickled down already into a $3,500 watch is really fascinating, and they put that with, I believe, its own balance wheel into the Caliber 5, which is based on the Sellita SW 200 or 220s, I'm not sure. And that's kind of interesting. Forget the watch. Yeah. It's a round and interesting thing.
Imagine if it were in the package of like a cool chronograph that was relating to the atomic. Yeah.
But, you know, think about like what Nomos did with their swing system. Mm-hmm. They didn't do much, frankly. They remade what ETA had already had in there with a, you know, they didn't make new materials for it. Mm-hmm. They still talk about it, featuring the new swing system. It's just a balance. Mm-hmm. You know, this is, you know, technologically and engineering wise, a very interesting thing. And they're all chronometer rated because of that. Just the watch is kind of a boring dud.
Yeah. The thing I thought you were going to talk about is like, the silver lining is the straps have this new quick release design.
I completely forgot about that. But now that's a silver lining of sorts.
Yeah. It's like, you know, with the quick release you're used to seeing, there's kind of like a... like almost like the thing you pull back on a rifle,
a little knob,
it's like you kind of pull a little trigger.
Yeah.
On this one, there's kind of like this little thing you slide your thumb on, and it unhooks from the spring bar.
Yeah. Which I mean, it's a totally interesting thing. It's like it'd be more interesting if they announced all watches from here on out are this. We have this cool interchangeable system because it makes it very modular. Mm-hmm. It's also going to make their straps hellishly complicated to make because there's like this whole metal spring mechanism in it. But it's seamlessly integrated. They didn't seem like bigger straps for it, and it works really well. Like you pull a little switch and a little like draw bridge opens and you can hook it around a metal bar.
Mm-hmm.
Works really well.
It's maybe they could have made like a cool chronograph that had like racing and like pilot features.
And called it the...
And then maybe it would have like the cool stuff on the inside to make it work.
Would it go broom broom?
Yeah. And maybe it could come with like a rally strap for racing and like a, you know, some other thing, like a full stitch strap for pilot stuff.
When are you a product development specialist?
I'm for hire. Yeah. I'll leave for Morning Wound at any moment.
Yeah. Yeah. And that was it. Yeah. That was really it. So moving on.
Yeah. And the last meeting of the day I took, and that was with Monta. So Monta kind of killed it this year. I think they actually so far have put out one of my favorite watches, and that's the Atlas GMT. So the Atlas is largely built in the same platform as the Triumph, which has a really nice under 40 millimeter case, beautiful finishing, really thin. So it like wears really well. But it sort of gets rid of some of my complaints that I had with the Triumph, which is largely a bit of a cluttered dial with all the numerals that it had on it. And here it gets rid of that, and then on top of that adds a GMT complication. So the dial's actually, I would say, more like the dial from like the Ocean King than it is, and the Sky Quest, which is
sort of their pilot.
It's
their Pepsi or their like Rolex GMT to their Rolex Submariner.
Yeah, without actually looking like that.
Yeah, watch. Not looking anything like it, but it's the same kind of, they took a format and used it for two different things, you know?
And it's generally really nice. Three colorways. There's a black dial. There's a, well, it's actually more of like a charcoal really in person. There's a blue dial, which is their like Monta blue,
sort of a teal from photos.
So in person it's not teal, it's it's really more blue. So I think that photo is a little bit off.
I'm getting into teal.
It
was teal,
but it's still really stunning in person because blue's really inky, like it has this really nice depth to it. And then my favorite is actually the white dial, which I actually didn't think I would like as much. I saw some early iterations of it, and they changed some of it in the final prototype, some of the design details, and this white dial is nice. So it's not white, it's like opaline. It's a great watch. I think they kind of killed it, and you know, I hope that they have success with it. I think they will.
Yeah, I think they will. They have a great little kinked GMT hand, which like, still, I don't know, one of the better looking hands I've ever seen. You know, not a lot of brands have memorable hands, and Monta does. It's a memorable hand.
Yeah. Anything to add, Blake?
No, not really. Sometimes when you're walking around Basel, people will have their like Grand Prix awards from the Grand Prix de Horology.
Is that the little hand?
It's a little hand. Okay. That's made me think of that. It's like a little baby hand. Just like a gold baby hand coming out of the ground.
I'm not cutting this out of the podcast.
That's fine.
That's great.
It's late. So that made me think of that. No, but I agree. The Montas, I mean, you can only say it so many times, but like, I just think they punch well above their weight.
Absolutely.
And like, did we talk about this yesterday on yesterday's podcast? But like taking that watch for what it is, like a GMT with that level of finishing at the $1,700 price point, that kind of like, I don't want to compare them to Rolex, cause like, I don't think they want to be compared to Rolex, but like, it's kind of like that really great Rolex sport watch at like 36, 38 millimeters, you know, there's not a lot out there at $1,700 at that price with that finishing. Like they really have an incredibly compelling product.
We either had this conversation last night on the podcast, which I should remember, or when walking around.
Yeah.
But I still agree. I'm a little in trouble that I can't remember that.
Yeah, it's great. I mean, they knocked it out of the park.
Yeah.
With that watch. Yeah.
Yeah.
And with that, that wraps up day one. I think we're all really tired.
Yeah.
I'm seeing blank stares right now.
Yeah. I'm just trying to think if anything else interesting happened while we were walking around or if we saw.
We really talked about, I mean, gotten back to like, you know, yesterday was press day. Mm-hmm. So we were waiting to see what it'd be like on day one. What was the feeling of Basel? And, you know, I guess it's like this is probably been talked to death, but it's really different. Mm-hmm. It's really different. The halls are weird, man. Like it's we went up to the second floor and like there's this the whole area that used to be Brands is just empty. It's just it's like a weird wall with weird pictures on it and they're dark little alcoves.
Mm-hmm.
And we like stopped there to post some Instagram, but it was odd. Yeah. There's no one around.
And I know like talking about this kind of feels like inside baseball, but it kind of isn't because like if you're into watches, like Baselworld is a huge part of the industry. Like it has been for a long time. And like actually as Jack pointed out today, like it would be kind of sad if it went away, right? Jack Forster from Hodinkee.
Yeah. No, totally. I mean, I think it would be sad if it went away because there's like an energy around it and you know, the press like going to cover it, brands like the attention they get from it, readers and people on Instagram like seeing all the content come out. And if that if that experience completely went away, I think we'd be missing out on something.
Yeah.
Yeah, and I feel like brands, like obviously they'll find other ways to do this, but they bring their A game here, you know?
And sorry, and I was just going to say, like, and I think, you know, like using Monta as an example, like Monta can come to a show like this, and if they show out, they can get sort of compared to brands of a much larger size
absolutely.
And sort of prove their worth, you know? And I think that's like a really valuable experience. And we've talked about it a million times. Like we used to come to Basel and wander the halls of like, you know, hall 2.2 or 2.1 and just find these random little brands. And there's no doing that this year.
No,
that does not exist. And it's too bad. It's really too bad. And just like weird products, like interesting products you can find. You know, we sell straps in the shop, like going out and looking at various strap manufacturers, that kind of a thing. Like you just can't do any of that stuff, which is like just too bad.
Yeah.
Yeah. Well, we have a lot of meetings tomorrow, a lot more kind of micro brands you know, we talk about on the site, but some European ones we don't get to meet in the U.S. often. So it should be another exciting day.
Yeah. So stay tuned. Thanks for listening to this week's episode of the Worn & Wound podcast. If you enjoyed the show, please leave us a review on iTunes. And don't forget to follow us on Instagram, Facebook, and Twitter. Looking for a new watch? A strap? Don't forget to visit the Wind Up Watch Shop. And of course, head to wornandwound.com daily for news and reviews of great wristwatches. Music tracks Nowhereland and Inspired are by Kevin MacLeod and are licensed under Creative Commons Attribution 3.0.